Thanks very much for the opportunity to talk to you this morning. I'm going to focus my presentation on the ability to design zinc finger proteins to target an investigator's chosen DNA sequence. And just one reason why we want to think about that is that the genome, represented here by this sky of chromosomes, represents essentially a new drug target for us. As the basic research continues to identify specific genes and even specific base pairs that are mutated in disease, what we require are technologies that allow us to go in at the gene or even at the base pair level to repair that particular particular mutation and correct the cell and provide those corrected cells back to the patient. So there's essentially one technology that permits us to do that, and I'm going to describe that to you as zinc finger proteins. So zinc finger proteins are a natural class of DNA binding protein. They're the most abundant type of DNA binding domain found in the human genome. They actually outnumber all the other types of DNA binding domain put together. And so what you're seeing here is the versatility of this domain. It's used throughout evolution to create new proteins that recognize different DNA sequences. And it's this natural versatility that we can make use of in the laboratory to create new proteins that recognize different and investigator-chosen DNA sequences. We actually know a tremendous amount about how an individual zinc finger depicted here, this is the alpha helix of a zinc finger protein, it interacts into the major groove of DNA, and we know very precisely the amino acids involved in a recognition of specific bases. And so, as Rudolf mentioned, it's a more complex DNA binding domain than perhaps TALENs, although he failed to mention that we designed all the TALENs for him in those experiments as well. This particular domain has many more amino acid contacts to a given triplet, and that permits us the ability to specify a base with tremendous precision, and I'll show you one example of that later on. So essentially, though, what this gives us is a code, a finger design in which we can, by selecting a specific finger sequence, have it recognize a specific triplet, and you can string these things together to create longer proteins that recognize a longer and longer target stretch. And in complex genomes, it's necessary to bind something that's about somewhere between 12 and 18 base pairs to be unique within a complex genome such as the human genome. And so we spent a great deal of time building out this archive, and that allows us to rapidly create proteins that target an individual base. To create the outcomes we're interested in, we actually have to fuse this targeting capability from the DNA binding domains of the zinc finger to an enzymatic domain stolen from an enzyme called FOC1. We have to make two of these proteins that bind in the correct orientation spacing to bring about the dimerization of these two entities, and that dimerization event creates an active nuclease, which puts a double-strand break into the genome at the site defined by these two proteins. If the blue protein binds to a sequence by itself, there's not even nicking activity of this enzyme. It requires the dimerization event to bring about catalytic cleavage. So this engineering capability, the ability to place in the genome the zinc finger protein to a defined site and build a partner for it that cuts the genome at a defined site, essentially is a very elaborate way of creating a designer restriction enzyme. In other words, being able to provide the investigator the opportunity of placing a double-strand break at the defined location of the human genome. The reason we want to do that is that we can use zinc fingers to take on a target DNA sequence, introduce this double-strand break, and then allow the natural processes of DNA repair to resolve that double-strand break in two different ways. On the left-hand side, we can rely on a process called non-homologous end joining, or NHEJ. This literally is the two ends of the DNA being glued back together again. When that happens, it's an error-prone process, and eventually mutations occur at the site of a double-strand break. And so this, if this original target sequence is placed within the coding region of a gene, results in mutation of that gene and ultimately a gene knockout. Alternatively, as Rudolf previously described, if you also provide a donor DNA, you can stimulate a homology-directed process, homologous recombination, in which information from the donor is copy-pasted into the genome directly at the site of a double-strand break. And so this actually can be a small point mutation, such as a mutation causing alpha-1 trypsin deficiency, or it might be an entire gene-sized sequence, such as the factor 8 or factor 9 gene in hemophilia. So we can do both both gene size as well as single base pair changes. Just to give you one example on this right-hand side of the pathway, where we're using site-specific gene correction, we recently published this work in Nature, correcting a mutation in the alpha-1 antitrypsin locus, the so-called ZZ mutation. And we showed that this ZFN-stimulated gene correction could be done in patient-derived iPSCs. That resulted in the correction of the alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency both in vitro in the cells in the dish, and then those were transplanted into an animal as hepatocyte-like cells engrafted and contributed to normal alpha-1 antitrypsin expression. But perhaps most importantly, and relating to the complexity of ZFP design, full exome sequencing of these cells revealed pristine editing. By that I mean there was no evidence across the entire exome of any unintended change to the genome. The only change in the genome was the intended correction of the alpha-1 antitrypsin mutation. And that at this stage is the only example of a technology able to act with that level of precision in the context of a complex genome. For the majority of the rest of my talk, I'm going to focus on the left-hand side of this pathway, this ability to create a gene disruption event, so knocking out a particular target gene. And for this application, I'm going to refer to our work in HIV and AIDS, in which we're targeting a particular receptor that HIV uses to gain entry to T cells. So the problem statement is that anti-HIV drugs, of which there are many, are very effective at suppressing HIV, but don't cure patients. If you take patients off these HIV medications, then virus comes back within a few weeks, essentially to the same set point it was prior to treatment. So the virus is very effectively hiding from the immune system. So is there a solution that we can functionally cure patients by providing them with HIV-resistant versions of their own cells? So in principle, if one was to correct a stem cell in some way to make it resistant to HIV, that stem cell would give rise to both T cells as well as macrophages and dendritic cells that would be protected from HIV entry and could essentially create an HIV-resistant immune system that could protect the patient from further viremia. So the target here is, as I mentioned, a classical receptor for HIV entry called CCR5. There's a natural mutation of this protein called the CCR5 delta 32 mutation, which is a truncation. And subjects who are homozygous for this mutation are highly resistant to HIV infection. If you take their T cells out and you challenge them with HIV, it fails to enter these cells. So we sort of knew that from the natural biology of this particular human mutation. Most recently, and perhaps most interestingly, the converse experiment was done. A patient who had HIV and, in fact, an AIDS lymphoma was transplanted with a donor who was CCR5 delta 32 homozygote. That transplantation essentially resulted in the protection of that patient from HIV, and in fact that patient is now 4 to 5 years out and has no detectable HIV viremia. And so this, if you like, is the converse experiment. We've transplanted these cells into a patient who had HIV, and these CCR5 negative cells have been able to provide the patient with a functional cure to his HIV. And so our goal in this study is really to replicate this natural biology using zinc finger nucleases to create CCR5 negative cells in the following process: that we could take the same patient's own cells out and in an ex vivo process treat them with zinc finger nucleases to eliminate CCR5 and then return those cells to the patient and hope to create, a functional cure to HIV. So to remind you what we're going to do here then, this is the CCR5 target. These are our zinc fingers are going to cleave this target, create a double-strand break. They will be repaired by this error-prone, non-homologous enjoining pathway. That leads to gene disruption. And just to place the ZFN target sequence in the context of the CCR5 receptor, we actually cleave at this rather N-terminal fragment here, creating an even shorter truncation than the delta 32. So this is the experiment we've tried to do then, is to create CCR5 negative HSCs and ask whether they could in fact prevent HIV from gaining a foothold. To establish this, we did some work in mice. There's a so-called humanized mouse model in which CD34 cells from patients are transplanted into the mouse. And then we, just using normal cells at this stage, once this engraftment had been demonstrated, we challenged with HIV to see if HIV would grow and replicate in this mouse model. And the answer is it does, both for X4-dependent viruses and CCR5-dependent viruses. we see a fairly rapid and extended period of HIV viremia. So this was the model system which we could then ask, well, what happens if you now transplant cells that are have been treated with zinc finger nucleases to become CCR5 negative? So the answer is you get a remarkably different outcome. This red line is the ZFN-treated cells, or animals transplanted with the ZFN-treated cells. Up to 6 weeks, we see the virus begin to replicate, but at the 6 weeks point, viremia crashes, and by 12 weeks, we can no longer detect virus in the peripheral blood or in the large or small intestine. So this is now below the level of detection for both these assays. And in addition, because the zinc fingers cut at a specific site in the CCR5 locus, we could ask the question whether this selection, this ability to eliminate virus, occurred with selection for CCR5 negative cells in the peripheral blood. We'd expect, if our theory is correct, that we would select for these CCR5 negative cells during the course of the experiment, and that's what's shown here as your mock treated HSCs derived from the different tissues, demonstrating that there's no CCR5 modification. If you use ZFN treated but uninfected, so no HIV, you see a stable low level of CCR5 modified cells in the peripheral blood, maintaining this initial CCR5 disruption of somewhat less than 20%. But after HIV infection in the peripheral blood and in the tissues, we see it's marked that these lower migrating products are resultant of an extremely prevalent form of the CCR5 modified cells. And in fact, if we're in sequencing, about 95% of all the alleles in these cell populations are CCR5 negative. So the virus has effectively cleared out everything that was infectable and leaving us only with the CCR5 modified cells. So this work was recently published, and as I mentioned, demonstrates that ZFN-treated HSCs can give rise to HIV-resistant CD4 T cells in vivo, that R5 tropic HIV selects for these CCR5 negative cells in vivo, and at least in the context of a mouse model, we were able to establish a functional cure, so control of HIV in this setting. And based on this data, we've actually, with our colleagues at USC, so Paula Cannon's group, and the City of Hope, so John Zayon colleagues and Dave DeGusto, in a serum disease team, we've begun to build the necessary scale-up manufacturing to take this to clinical testing. So the concept is an AIDS lymphoma patient that they'd be apheresed. We'd establish the HSC population, modify these cells ex vivo, and then reinfuse them to the patient in the analogous protocol to what was done for the so-called Berlin patient. And this actually is very heavily supported by the fact that we're already in clinical trials with a non-stem cell-derived product, which in fact is our T-cell work. So we've already begun trials with CD4-modified cells in which a very similar path. There's an apheresis to obtain CD4-positive cells. These are ex vivo modified, expanded, tested, and then infused back into the patient. And this is work done with Ron Mitsuyasu's group at UCLA and Carl June's group at Penn. And we've already have some early data from those phase one clinical trials, which is giving us great hope that this strategy itself could have a tremendous benefit to patients. So with that, what I hope I've shown you is that this ability to create a zinc finger that targets a particular region of the genome and creates a double-strand break, if you will, a cut at a defined site in the human genome, can give us the opportunity to give rise to very different outcomes. On the left, we can, in fact, knock out genes, and as I've shown you, the example here is HIV, where we're knocking out a co-receptor for HIV entry. And on the right here is the donor DNA version, in which we're introducing new genes. And this is obviously examples of the alpha-1 antitrypsin that I showed you in iPS cells. But we also have direct in vivo applications of this, in hemophilia, where we're correcting both factor 8 and factor 9 in situ in the context of the liver, again, in animal models at this stage. And with that, I'll pause and take any questions. Thank you very much.